From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Welcome to the Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the Dirk Pohlman Show from Berlin, Germany. And my guest today is Jochen Mitschka, who once lived in Germany, was a colleague here in the alternative media, and now lives in Namibia. Jochen, do you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm very honored. Thank you.
Same to me. let's start with that. Maybe you explain, you have been a consultant mainly in Southeast Asia. You have been a manager in a German software company. I know you, the first time you didn't know that I encountered you was when you translated the book, The Dirty War in Syria. So there is a connection to Australia that you have. But maybe you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you are doing, why I invited you, so others can understand.
Oh, yes. Oh, I have been living 10 years in Southeast Asia and had run a own private business with my wife. And during that time, I must confess that before I had closed eyes. I didn't understand what was going on in the world. And then it happened 9/11, and I started to open my eyes a little bit, look around. And it took several years until I understood that a lot of things I was believing in were not really reality, but a show. And so I started to write. Firstly, I started to write about things in Southeast Asia. And then in 2009, we came back to Germany. And I was working for a company who was developing software for the pharmaceutical industry. And I was a project manager and coordinator especially for the industry who is producing jabs and blood products. So I had a very deep insight into how these products are produced, and therefore in 22 I thought I lost my mind when I saw what happened in Germany with Corona, and this was the final blow for me to understand that you can tell people a lot and nearly everything, and if the media are following your narrative, and this made me at the end made me believe that I cannot stand to live in Germany because the society was not what I thought it should be, and so I was leaving last year I was leaving definitely, and we're going to Africa because Africa seems to me the next piece of world which is going to develop and who is becoming the big field of war between one side, the Imperium with its vassals, and on the other side, the new world order, which is just now starting to being created around China and Russia, and maybe there is a third party, which is the part of the non-aligned countries, and this will be a very interesting thing to look at. And I recently wrote a piece in a German site about China, the war against China, and also Australia was playing a role in that piece. And I must say, I found a lot of similarities between Germany and Australia, because in both countries, it seems that the political leadership is losing the interest in their own well-being, in the well-being of their own country, and are following interests which are not really the interests of their own country. So when I look at the submarine deal, which is recently gone through the media, and this is something very similar to what is happening in Germany with the war against Russia, you know. It's just not in the interest of Germany what is going on in Germany. And in Australia, my intention or my belief is that it's not in the interest of Australia to, at least now they paid $580 million dollar compensation to the French partner who they've first wanted to cooperate with for the submarine. So everything is a little bit crazy in the moment.
Yes, there you mentioned several points that I would like to get into a little bit. And one quite interesting is that 2012, I was working here in Germany for a research institution. And they had to do with, they were working in the field of malaria. Malaria is something where nobody is from the pharmaceutical side is really interested in. The medication is produced at a higher price than you can sell it. So this is, if you go into the field of malaria, you meet the Bill Gates Foundation. They are dominating this. There's, of course, WHO, but they don't have anything to say. In the field of malaria, of AIDS and tuberculosis, it's the Bill Gates. It's all the bunch of institutions, Gavi, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, that is all really there. They're running the policy there. And there was a strange thing, because in 2008, as you mentioned, the analysis in the United States was that Africa is going to be the next part on the planet, the continent, which will have two-digit growth, economic growth rates. And it's quite clear that Africa will follow. There's a lot of opportunity there. So the Americans declared that there will be a new command, the Africa Command. And they wanted to place the Africa Command somewhere in Africa, but really none of the nations, except at that time Liberia, which was in a civil war, and nobody was really interested to get into that area, none of the countries was willing to host Africa Command. So Africa Command was... is now, it's in Germany, it's in Stuttgart, Germany. So Africa is run from Germany because the United States does not have to ask what they're doing in Germany. And this leads to the other thing that you mentioned, that our country is in effect still an occupied country from World War II with a limited sovereignty, you could call it, for the interior. Many things can be done, but not everything. And for the exterior policy, we have to swallow that, or at least our governments think that the Americans blow up the pipeline, the Nord Stream pipelines in the Baltic Sea. And we have to look eagerly to Russia if they were the culprit to do that. Your piece that you mentioned is very interesting. And yesterday I listened to a talk that the former Australian Prime Minister Paul Keating gave to several journalists. And he was very outspoken. And then I thought, something like that. I don't know. Have you seen the interview? Have you heard about it? It was in Consortium News.
Yes, it was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. You know, I was nearly crying, because it showed that there is still a part of the politics of the elite is still not swallowed. You know, and it was really making me very happy. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I was very astonished, because he was very much to the point, and you could call it even harsh, the way he talked. There was no, he didn't mince his word in any way. And that does not happen in Germany. I think that is might be interesting to the foreign listeners, the people from the Anglo-American world or the Anglo-Saxon world, that in Germany there's nothing like that. Even the people who are opposition to the current government that is selling tanks to Ukraine, they have been really forced by the Americans to do that. And America said, we also will sell tanks to Ukraine, but of course they first have to be built. So it's about 1 year until they arrive there. And until then, we are in a kind of a mafia gang situation where we have to have blood on our hands so that we are part of the gang and can have a career in the gang. Nobody is speaking like that, like Paul Keating did in Australia, here in Germany. And you were mentioning in your article, maybe you could say in a strangely enough, in Germany, it is a military, former high-ranking military people who take a position that they remind us of the geopolitics behind this conflict. That is, for example, Harald Kujat, the former general inspector of the Bundeswehr, so the highest military person in Germany, or General Watt, who had been the advisor to Chancellor Merkel, and he's publishing in a feminist magazine, Emma, where the chief editor is running a petition to stop the war, to go into peace negotiations, not more than that. And they're everything is thrown at them. It's hard to believe what they are called. They're called a peace fascist. Yeah, interesting word. But to getting to your piece, you were what is if you can outline the what in your opinion is the rough situation, roughly the grand scheme, the grand picture. And if you could also relate to what you think is known in Germany about it, and now that you live in Namibia in Africa, what in Southern Africa is known about it. So that's yours is the field, but please first for some advertisements for 2 or 3 minutes, and after that we get back to Jochen Mitschka.
TNT Radio's Ross Cameron.
Australia has taken a decision in the military sphere which Australians may struggle to comprehend the significance of the step change that this decision involves. I thought I should go back just a few years to 2014. The Abbott government will select a Japanese-built Soroya-class submarine. So that's 2014. Then on April 26, 2016, French company DCNS will build Australia's $50 billion new Barracuda submarine fleet in Adelaide. So then we have round three of this extraordinary, magnificent step change in submarines, which came on the 16th of September 2021, when we learned that it was not the Japanese, not the French, but Australia is embarking on its most significant change of defence and strategic direction in decades. Prime Minister Scott Morrison said a new alliance had been formed with the UK and the US that was the most significant security development for Australia since the ANZUS Treaty. Interesting that ScoMo flipped on a dime from the commitment which we forced the French to comply with, that the submarines must not be nuclear powered.
Ross Cameron on TNT Radio. What is dadication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much, from the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between. It really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dadication.
Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Dirk Pohlman. On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And my guest is Jochen Mitschka, one of the foremost geopolitical authors in the alternative media in Germany. My question to him was an outline of the grand scheme and what is known about this grand scheme, how much is it discussed in Germany, and what about the southern African tip of the of the continent that you live in? How much is the grand scheme discussed there?
Okay, let's start with Mearsheimer in 2012. Since 2012, I was following him, and he was always warning that a war between the US and China will not be able to hinder. So I was
it will, there will be a war with the point, yes, is to make that clear. The point is that Mearsheimer said that the confrontation between the US empire and China is in a way there will be a war, unavoidable. Many people have said, yes, that, by the way. Yeah.
Yes. And I was following this since 2012. At the beginning, I was naive because I thought somebody must be able to stop them and to make them bring them back to the ground. But then 2015, Mearsheimer and other, they were here in Europe and talking in a round table a speech with several politicians, but nobody was reporting about it. And then the demonization of Russia and China went on and became stronger and stronger. And now you can say that the countdown for the war is starting. I think this year that a high U.S. general said that the soldiers should get their things in order, because in 2025 he feels that a war with China will break out. And on the other hand, in China, the military budget were increasing by 7.2%. So everything was pointing to the fact that really in this year, next year, or latest in 2025, there will be a big war. And then I was looking how the US was treating the war against Serbia and fighting for the independence of Kosovo, and now doing exactly the same, the contrary in Kiev. So now he is. The U.S. are on the other side of the picture, and then there is again China, and then they play the other role again. Now they are for the independence of Taiwan and against the core country. So
yeah, let's put that into perspective shortly. That is, in Yugoslavia, when the conflict started, Kosovo wanted to split from Yugoslavia, and that was Germany didn't have a very good role in that. They were the first ones to recognize that and were really instrumental in breaking up Yugoslavia. At that time, Kosovo becoming an independent state, breaking away from Yugoslavia, was accepted by the NATO alliance under American guidance. I mean, it's always America is leading and the others just have to follow and shut up. And then in the Crimea, we have the opposite. So Crimea wanted to segregate from Ukraine. Anybody who has ever been there knows that that about, I think, more than 90% of the population are Russian-oriented and wanted to go away there. Even all, they also had been something like a voter referendum showing that. And then now we have Taiwan, and Taiwan, which the Americans accepted since 1972 as part of China, the One China policies, and the position rather was don't rock the boat. Now they try to rock the boat as much as possible. And again, there's never any common rule to that. It is simply in terms of what is geopolitically favorable for the American side. Do you think, when you go on now, do you think that Ukraine is just a the overture for the conflict with China? Is it something like a foreplay for the big thing, the war with China? What is your position or your take on that?
Yes, sure. That is, it's the global South knows it very well, and it's quite sure this way. You know, it's just the beginning of something much greater, much more dangerous than this war. And yeah, the problem is now happened something in the U.S. They sanctioned this industry, which the most precious industry for computer and science, and the Netherlands producer may not deliver anymore the chip manufacturing machines to China and so on. And they force the US people working in China to come back to the US, otherwise they can lose their citizenship. And all these things, this reminded me very much of something which the US did in 1941 when they were sanctioning Japan with oil and steel, in order to force them to do something stupid, which they were doing by bombing Pearl Harbor without the American leadership telling the military that they were coming. So it reminded me very much of this, and then they were discussing. If China were getting together with Taiwan, they would destroy the chip industry in Taiwan. This is a burnt earth policy of the Nazis. But you know, it's unbelievable that this was published openly. You know, and this made me again thinking, what could the Chinese do? And then they came out with a new paper. And this paper
yes.
very clearly shows that China is now ready for the war. They are not diplomatically holding back anymore. They are not kind and friendly. Now they are very, very clear. And in my piece, I was translating some of the things and explaining what it means. And I think this paper is a clear taking up of the words the Americans were with the Americans were trying to demolish and to attack the China, and it shows now we are not going back anymore. We have learned from the Opium Wars that we need to have some good tools, some war tools, and this time we will not lose the war against the Western powers. They will not be able to colonize us again. And this is so clear now that we are just a step before the war, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed the same. I've just been discussing this, the tone of that paper from the ministry, the foreign ministry in China is very unusual. China has always been soft-spoken, so to speak. They're not loud wording. And the paper is called U.S. Hegemony and Its Perils. And the contents is, if you read that, you know what's going on. The first chapter is political hegemony, throwing its weight around. The second part is military hegemony, wanton use of force. The third, economic hegemony, looting and exploitation. The fourth, technological hegemony, monopoly and suppression. And fifth, cultural hegemony, it's spreading false narratives. And it's, if you read it, they come up with papers from American universities, but the whole tone is it's taking the gloves off becoming ready for a fight. I agree with that. But then again, this has not been in Germany. It has not really been reported that there's a weather change. You have the situation in Australia where the defense strategy is completely new. It's not what it used to be. You have the Chinese speaking the way they speak and saying they're ready for a conflict. You have the war in Ukraine, which is increasing. It's a proxy war, meanwhile. It's not Zelensky against Biden. It's Putin against Biden, meanwhile. Yeah, it is a proxy war. And the situation gets more and more dangerous. But in Germany, we don't hear really about it. It's kind of a propaganda version of reality where the background story, for example, what you just told us, the upcoming war with China, which has been foretold, it's a chronicle, it's like Garcia Marquez, a chronicle of a death foretold. It's something where we know that it's happening, but it is not discussed. It is always discussed under the auspices that China is getting more aggressive and the West has to do something about it. And that includes Germany. Germany is now with the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in the South China Sea with a ship and four planes always. They're involved in that. So that's my question. What about Africa? When you are in Namibia and South Africa has also, they voiced their concern about this and they didn't follow suit with the American foreign policy, they were trying to push into that, but they didn't. What is the, can you judge that? Do you live long enough there to have a feeling for what's going on?
I'm speaking with many people, with politicians and with intellectuals and academics and also normal people. And I must say there is a more or less a split in the public opinion, because you know the EU and the US propaganda arms are very long, very very strong. For example, until last week we were able to get Russia Today on satellite TV over in Namibia, not anymore since 1 year, but over a South African supplier, we got it, and then suddenly this were shut down too. The papers very often just print what the Western news agency published. So it's difficult. The intellectuals, they know very well what happens, very well, but the normal people, they are not really deeply informed and don't really know what happens, and this is very dangerous, because this is a way where you normally can create color revolutions, because the people are not informed, that don't know the background of something, you know. So in the moment there is no risk of a color revolution here, but anyhow, it's difficult, because the propaganda is really well organized, we must say, until the, not only in the northern or in the western part of Africa, but also here in the southern part. It's really amazing.
Do you still follow what is going on in Germany in the media? In the media there, or are you more focused on Africa now?
I'm more focused on the view from the global south onto the global politics. So, yes, I follow a lot in Germany, but I'm not deeply involved anymore. It's more that I take a look to Pakistan, for example. What is what is going on in Pakistan. And Ukraine is sure, many intellectuals here in Africa, they say this is a war for us, because if they lose this war, it means Imperium won, and we have to stay under their rule. And but if they win, if Russia wins the war, or at least can save the people in the area which wanted to become part of Russia, then something will be changing. So everybody here in the south of Africa is watching very, very, at least let's say the people who are politically interested. And here is especially in Namibia is a great German population. Great, it's 1% or 2% or 3%, I don't know. But nevertheless, there are many Germans.
Yeah, and, but as a German, you notice. So I've been in Namibia, and then you notice how German it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought they are more influenced by German politics, because the German language radio stations, for example, they often start with German news, you know, just copied from a German news agency. But I think we are here 30 years back, you know. The people are more open, more liberal, more questioning what happens. It's very strange. But maybe it's the same, like often you find in colonies or you often find that people who live abroad have another development in their society than the mother country, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there. I don't know if it really leads too far, but that's one of my favorite stories from World War One. There had been the Samoa had been under German colonial rule, but the guy who was the governor in Samoa was a reasonable person. He was a scientist, on ethnologist about this area. And he managed, there were British living there, French living there, there were Samoans. And all of them were quite happy, might be said too much, but they were satisfied with the way the island was governed. And so when World War One broke out, they all made the decision and said, look, we get along quite well here. That's nothing wrong with between the Germans and the British and the French here, and even some Americans. So let's just pretend we didn't hear that there is a world war. And for some time, they managed to stay on their, let's say, happy little island and simply neglected the fact that there had been World War One. Until then, finally came a British warship, and everything turned. World War One finally arrived also there. That is a very, I think it could be made into a movie. It could be something like a grotesque. It is very, just what you said, that the situation might be different when you look at it from the perspective of being far away. But that is, I think, what's happening right now is kind of a tectonic movement in world history. The global south, as you mentioned, you are interested in, is rising. There's, G7 is only, I think, 15% of the worldwide population, and BRICS is something like 40% of the worldwide population. So the the importance of the global south is changing. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that, if you say you're interested what's going on in Pakistan, because there's a lot going on. There's Saudi Arabia, there's the peace process between Saudi Arabia and Iran that was administered by China, which is reported in a way, but this is very important. So China is getting the role of what Switzerland had before in Geneva. Suddenly it's China, and sometimes also Turkey. But you tell us about it.
Oh, so many things are happening in the moment in the global area. You know, it's unbelievable. And the global south is looking very much at China in the moment, because China were able to put two enemies together on one table and to get them to start a diplomatic relationship again, which was unthinkable before. And it was exactly the contrary what the US is doing in that area, you know, in that wider Asian area, let's say. They are always trying to take profit from the differences and from the feuds of the countries. And now suddenly someone is saying, okay, we want to make trade and everybody should profit from it, and we should all develop. And so there is no way, no place anymore for war and for differences, and we should not try to kill each other, but to have a profit all together, and everybody should take profit out of our trade. You know, this is a totally different approach, which is seen very, very well here in Africa, and you can see it. They look at Russia for security, and they look for trade and social development to China. In the moment, it's still hesitatingly, and they still don't know exactly when and how the development will be ripe to for themselves to be strong enough to withstand the pressure from the US and the West as a total, because they are very strong, still very, very strong. And you see, it's so, but it's like in Vietnam, the US was fearing a domino effect, but this could happen now. Now this could happen, a domino effect, not not becoming communist, but becoming China friendly. This is the big fear from the US, and this will happen if the tide changes, and there is hopefully only short war between the US and China, resulting in showing that China cannot be defeated, then everything will change very rapidly.
Yeah, but a war that's like Russia, USA, China, USA, we're talking about things which were unthinkable 5 years ago, or now I'd say 10 years ago. And that's really, I always would like to, I had, when I was a student, I had at my university, I had a professor in philosophy who had been in Japan, in Hiroshima, when the nuclear bomb exploded. He was a Jesuit. There was a Jesuit monastery there, and about, I think it was about 40 people from all over the world. His parents had sent him there because they feared that in Germany, he had quite a big mouth, that he would be into trouble with in the Nazi school. So they tried to send him as far away as possible into safety, which was Hiroshima. Yeah, they didn't know what they did, of course. And but he had he was lecturing to us about that. He was a professor for ethics also in Japan, by the way, at the Sophia University in Tokyo, which is one of the foremost universities there. And his point was always that he said in World War II, you had two large evil, so to speak. You had Auschwitz, and Auschwitz is well recognized, although we are often told, especially in Germany, that it should never be forgotten. It isn't forgotten. And it's clear how to look at it. There's nobody who says Auschwitz was a good thing to do. The neo-Nazis in Germany don't say Auschwitz was a good thing to do. They lie that it never happened. Their version is it never happened. But then he said the other thing is the nuclear weapons. And that is kind of a state terrorism, where one government threatens the other that in case you don't do what, in case we consider you aggressive or war a war party, we will destroy your men, your women, your children, your nature, all the animals, all the plants, the whole livelihood, maybe even the planet. That's, for example, with the Samson option from Israel. They don't talk about it, but the meaning of the Samson is that if we go down, the whole world will go down. That is the threat. This time we will not step into the oven alone. That's a quote. Yeah, that from Israel. So that is, but what you have is what he said is, we don't recognize that. That is kind of state terrorism. And in fact, you should always, if there is a foreign minister from a nuclear power comes to a country, you should arrest them and say your country is guilty of state terrorism. By the way, China is the only of the nuclear countries that said we will never, their policy is never to use nuclear weapons as a first power. They say we will retaliate, but we will never use them as first power. That is something I think there should be a peace movement is bitterly needed now, and that could be part of it, that all the countries should be willing to sign into a policy like that, never using it first. Yeah, that is something. But it is state terrorism. It even means that the coming generations, if there are ones, will be radioactive. The genetics will be damaged by radioactivity. So all of that is going on at the same time. And now we are talking already about possible wars. That is coming from the situation from 89 when Gorbachev and also Reagan were going down in nuclear warheads and trying to abolish nuclear weapons. That was a common policy between even Reagan, who was not a man of peace, but he was a man of trying to abolish nuclear weapons, and he met that with Gorbachev. We are so far away from that. And now this the great undeclared evil, nuclear weapons, which are not weapons, which are simply means of mass destruction, are again quoted as a possibility. We have to get back to advertisements, and then I get back to you, and I'd like you to what your take on is on that, also on the Chinese way of dealing with a situation. Yeah, but first the ads.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Gallup is out with brand new poll results on Americans' attitudes towards the Middle East, and some of the numbers are not good at all. Remember back in October of last year when former President Trump warned American Jews they had better get their act together and realize what they have in Israel before it's too late, noting that evangelical support for the Jewish state outpaced that of Jews in America. For that legitimate concern, Trump was labeled an anti-Semite by the ADL, the White House, and media. Of course he was. The aforementioned groups are made up mostly of Democrats, and Gallup has found that Democrats sympathize more with the Palestinians than the Israelis, 49% to 38%. That's an 11-point increase in Democrat support for the Palestinians in the past year. And to Trump's point, it's worth noting that some 70% of Jews in America lean Democrat. Independents are more sympathetic to Israel, 49 to 32%, but that's up 6 points for the Palestinians. Republicans, they're 80% to 11% in favor of Israel. Overall, the Palestinians register a new high of 31% support, while the 54% of Americans sympathizing more with the Israelis, that's the lowest since 2005. And you can thank the Dems and the biased anti-Israel media for those numbers. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Are you finding it harder to do the things you used to do, like vacuuming or getting to appointments? If you need a bit of support at home, the Australian Government's My Aged Care is your starting point to access services. You'll find all the information and advice you need in the one place. To find out about other services, eligibility and costs, call 1800 200 422. Or go to myagedcare.gov.au. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra, spoken by Heather Christie.
You're listening to Dirk Pullman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
My guest is Jochen Mitschka, German geopolitical analyst in the alternative media scene. And I'd like a little bit why my professor at that time said it was a huge war crime. In Hiroshima, 95% of the dead were women and children. They dropped this bomb on a city which was not devastated because they wanted to see what kind of devastation a nuclear bomb could do. So they needed something that was intact, and it was intact because it was not a military target. And also the notion, there were two different kind of bombs. This is why Hiroshima and Nagasaki were bombed. Then after that, the people were not treated medically. They were surveyed what the effects of radioactivity and the nuclear bomb are for many, many years. There were doctors there, American doctors, looking at them, but not treating them. They were not allowed to treat them, to help them in their suffering. And it was not even ending the war. There's quite a lot of literature on that. And academia, Gar Alperovitz, for example, was the first one writing about that. It was more directed at showing the Soviet Union what they had. So this is the evil origin of nuclear weapons. And what is your, Jochen, what is your take? What is China? Which direction is China going with nuclear weapons and with the threat of war?
It's relatively clear, you know. You see the numbers. It's just a few hundred warheads they have. It's because they say, okay, we only use it for retaliation in case of, we don't ever use it to make a war of aggression or to devastate any other part of the world. They say, this is our ultima ratio, and we don't need more. Why we need more? And if you look at the US and the also the Russian Federation nuclear war capabilities, you see there are thousands and all different types, from small to medium to big size. And also, you know, in the US now, the submarines are using also smaller warheads, so they can be used in case of limited devastation they want to cause. It's terrible, you know, it's totally different. Mm-hmm. While China is really looking at it, we will never use this. No, we will never use this. The Americans and also Russia, they say, okay, this is a weapon we will use in case something really ugly happens to us. And what that is, it's open, you know, open to us to estimate. And maybe soon we will see what it is. I hope not, but it's really ugly.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that is the big difference between Russia and China, is that Russia is on par with the United States nuclear weaponry. So both have something like 6,000 to 7,000 warheads where they came down from the Cold War levels through Gorbachev and Reagan. But this is the next treaty that maybe will be thrown out of the window, like the INF treaty, the medium range nuclear weapons treaty, which was also installed by Reagan and Gorbachev. They abolished a whole category of nuclear weapons at that time. So this is where the possibilities were in 89. But as you said, but China is in a strange way, it is an economic power that will surpass the American empire soon. And that, I think, is and the whole what it's called pivot to the Pacific, the whole center of gravity of the world economy is going there. And China is not, has never been, and is also not the big military power. But what do you see? Are they, I mean, they're, what we can see is that they're quite prudent, not quite, they're very prudent in their political class. There are lots of very intelligent and rational people. But what is the, do you know what China is contemplating in this dangerous attitude of an American empire that will not accept that somebody of similar size and boxing in the same weight class as them is suddenly appearing in the ring?
I think they know they cannot avoid a war. They would like to do it, I'm sure, because it's bad for business. and that is so for them it's bad for business, but for the US maybe good for business if all the others buy the weapons from the US. But that's another point. Okay, no, I think they are ready to go to war now. They know we cannot avoid it. It's they see it exactly in Ukraine. They were following it and they learned, okay, you cannot avoid it. You will not be able to avoid it. And this is what made me thinking that maybe they even will do the first draw. You know, maybe they even do the first draw and do something, for example, like blockage of Taiwan, or even starting something like an invasion, which then would cause maybe the destruction of the chip manufacturing in Taiwan. The reason behind, and then they go back and say, no, we will never shoot against Chinese. You know, then what they would have caused is that the Western world would have gone rid of the cheapest and best chip manufacturing possibilities and would be in par with China, who may not buy these machines from Netherlands and is not allowed to buy the chips, you know. So both then would be on the same level, and then there would be a fight who is the first one to regain the leadership in this sector, and who would win.
Which is very important sector. I mean, that is something I try to follow that, and it's very difficult. But the change in computing, where you have the quantum computing, which, for example, is in cryptography, you suddenly, everything that we ever, when we had crypto, like Pretty Good Privacy or GNU-PG, that all can be read now with the new computers. And the possibilities are endless. Also, the possibilities for war fighting are endless. And I think a lot of that is tried out in Ukraine right now. It is, it's microelectronics is the warfare of the future. It will be more and more into that. So that is a core thing. But then we also had, I think I even read it also in your article, that in 44, there are 44 areas of high technology, and in 37, China is now leading. They're leading in terms yeah. Of patents and so on. So is it even possible to bring down China even with militarily without a full scale war? Is it possible to keep them to the ground?
No, I don't think that the analysts in the US will really believe in that. I think what they intend to do is to erect a new iron curtain, you know. In order to avoid their vassals to change the group to become part of the multipolar world, you know, they want to be sure that at least the Western world stays under the hegemony of the US, and then they will fight for Africa. They know that Asia is lost, but they only can close the ranks if they really fight a war, because a war at the end will close the ranks in the Western world. But it can also do the contrary. If it runs bad for the US, maybe the war against China will see a split in NATO, and maybe even some difficult it was to make them fighting. Nobody knows exactly. They are very intelligent people, and they are planning for many years. But at the end, nobody knows exactly what will happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a dire outlook. I'm sad that we cannot be more optimistic on that. But I think what you say is in a way realistic also. I hope that some people are trying to play with that and that they not really go for that. But this is what we all will see. So these are the last 30 seconds I would like to give to you. What is your outlook? What will we... is it really... Do you think we'll see a war until 2025 with China?
I think there will be a war with China. But the question is how difficult and how deep the war will be going. Maybe it will be just some short exchange which will be used to close ranks of the Western world, and then it will be an iron curtain which will be erected, and everything will be a partition of the world into parts.
Okay.
Maybe.
We have to get out of the show now. Thank you, Jochen Mitschka.